Hey everyone, welcome to episode 2 of the Reality TV Challenge Wrap Up. My name is Allie Lasher, awkward as always, introducing the show. As you know, if you hear my voice at the top of the show, it means that Brian is not joining us this week. Instead, we are joined by my favorite Johnny, Johnny Langan. Johnny, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, Allie. I am psyched to be here. I'm a little bummed,
though.
I'm bummed for Brian because the website, MTV, they were nonstop advertising getting a, you know how Brian always talks about how he wants a challenge jersey with his name on it? This was the week that you could contact MTV with things about the challenge and you could be entered into win a challenge jersey. So I contacted them. I'm going to be wearing one that says Cohen very shortly, I'm sure.
I love doing this podcast, and not that I love that Brian's not here, but it's like a great opportunity to get to talk to you, who, like, you've been on the show before, but people who don't know, Johnny and I went to undergrad together and have formed like a very special bond over the MTV suite of television shows. So this is like also just great to catch up with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's my second time on the show, so I'm officially a vet. I think that this season is gonna be one for the books after a couple of duds. I'm doing good. I'm happy to see what's his name, my boy Jordan, on the show again, because my claim to fame is that yes, twice I have shared an elevator with Jordan on the way to and from an audition that we were going to together. So I mean, we're practically best friends, so I'm really excited to see him get more than 2 seconds of screen time, hopefully in the future.
Wait, did I, and forgive me if you mentioned this to me before or many times, did I know about this budding elevator friendship?
You definitely knew about the first one because I didn't know it was him, but he does have a couple very distinct physical traits other than his face. And then I realized...
The mustache?
Yeah, the mustache, exactly. But no, he random has been like in and out of my LA life, but like very tertiarily. My best friend used to date like one of his best friends, so she went to dinner with like Sarah and Frank and Jordan, and all I was just like, come on, like, invite me, please. I don't know what I'd say or what I'd do, but just to be a fly on that wall, right? Am I right?
Something tells me you'd figure something out.
I would make it work. I would just probably get us all very drunk and ask them a lot of embarrassing questions, like, what was production like? Did you really have to sleep with the lights on? Who was the most annoying other than me?
Okay. We have so much to cover this episode. I'm so glad you're here for this episode. But a couple of notes from last week. First off, thank you to our 5-star reviewers, Crazy Sports Mom and Jennifer Holtzman. It means a lot. Totally helps us get out there on iTunes. You want to help us and support the show, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/challenge iTunes. And leave your thoughts. We really appreciate it. Okay, couple of updates, and I'm going to scroll through as I have been known to do from my favorites and my screen caps. So nice. Kristen Marie pointed out to us on Twitter that Ammo tweeted about his preferred pronouns and said that he is comfortable with he, she, and or they. So always appreciated. Thank you very much to Kristen and Ammo for pointing that out. Additionally, last week there was some speculation with Ashley quitting the show and if there was more than what met our eyes. Common theme in the last few episodes, maybe there's more than on the show. So Ashley on Instagram provided this explanation. I have to explain myself to no one, but I do feel the need to let my fans in on what really happened in Colombia. There were multiple reasons why, including things back home, but I was so not physically or mentally ready for another season. I had gotten home from Champs v Pros 1 week before and had the season 29 reunion that same week, which is insane. That's my own commentary, not hers, although I'm sure she'd agree.
I also agree.
Yeah. My right ankle was twice the size from balls in against Ashley K. After leaving, I actually had an x-ray in Colombia. They believed I had a small fracture. The icing on the cake was when not one, but both of my bags were lost by the airlines. I know I could have stayed and hey, I might have done well, but believe but I believe I truly needed a break and no money can buy happiness.
Yeah, I fully support that. Did you know that during the Champs versus Pros, it was shot and apparently it was under 2 weeks of filming and they competed every single day? So Ashley Kay got sent home pretty early on because she's not very great. Ashley's competing against these Olympians with basically a broken ankle. And then to come back and have to leave again in a week after just competing on a broken ankle, that's insane. I would have lost my mind. So I'm kind of glad she's sitting this one out too. She's been on the show like every season since she appeared.
Yeah, this has been completely crazy. I know that there is some speculation also that CT's passport issue was also injury related and like maybe he just needed an extra couple of days. Can't confirm that. That's just, you know, what we're going to talk about tonight is speculation. We do the best we can.
Well, because where was Champs versus Pros filmed? I don't remember, but if it wasn't in America, his passport should have been fine, you know?
Great point.
So if he had left the country, you know, that month, and he's trying to go out of the country again, it should work, CT. But I mean, it made for good TV, you know, and that's sometimes all I care about.
Now I'm like very curious. It says that it was in LA.
Oh, makes sense. I should have gone. I should have been there, Allie.
Oh, amazing. Okay, so one thing I want to catch up with you on from the first episode is this $1 million twist that's keeping everyone in suspense via lies. Leah Knight says, so do you have your tinfoil hat ready, by the way?
Oh, I'm never taking it off.
Okay, perfect. It's like a tinfoil, just like
wig. Yeah, permanent tinfoil tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why like a wig in my mind is more permanent than a hat. But anyway, so she says, is there any chance that MTV added the $1 million prize money later? And that's why there's only separate footage of TJ talking about it because it was filmed later.
That's a tough, very big pill for me to swallow. I don't believe that to be true. I mean, I think it would be really fun. I mean, that's why it would explain why TJ had that really kind of like funky but amazing confessional. I think the thing about the $1 million is that there's going to be a bunch more winners than there are expected. So even though there is a giant lump sum at the end, it's going to be probably split up between a bunch of different people, not as expressly as Are You the One, where everybody basically gets $5,000. But like, I have a feeling that all top six or even top eight or something like that will happen where, do you think it's going to be two people who get split $1 million?
No, see, I think that's really interesting. And something that's sort of jives with that, at least in the first two episodes, is this whole thing about like, okay, the top four people are safe. And here we have like another top four men and women. Like, I thought it was a weird thing to have a group of eight be in the power position this week. I thought that was strange. So it does sort of add more money, more people getting rewarded potentially. As far as this this theory, I like it. I like that, you know, people are thinking outside the box here. I just, my question would be why? Like, what is the motivation to change the money later that you wouldn't have thought
about? It's a big season. It's the 30th season, right? And so, I mean, go big, go home. I mean, I don't see this show being canceled anytime in the future, but if you can throw $1 million at those awful people who got stranded on an island, why not do it for your like your stands, the people who are pretty much bringing in all of your reality competition drama and all your like recurring fans? So I think, do you think maybe that it'll be a final six or something? I'm just thinking number threes right now. I'm trying to think my tinfoil hat is buzzing. I'm trying to think of all the other ways that you could potentially split this $1 million. Eight makes a lot of sense because, you know, you could split it that many ways.
I totally get why they increase the prize money for this season. I just wouldn't understand why they would add, you know, they would chuck $650,000 at in addition later in the game, like if they didn't plan it, like she's saying, like, oh, do you think they just like went back and TJ put it in post? You know, like that. I don't get the motivation. Like, I think this $1 million twist was pre-planned, even if it seems a little artificial.
Yeah, does TJ always do, I mean, I've seen every season, but does TJ always do one of those Jeff Probst style interviews or intros to kick off the season? I feel like he doesn't. So I really, from the first episode, that opening shot of just like a really gritty, sweaty TJ trying to stand by this pool, talking about it, does feel a little bit like retrofitted. So I'm not ruling this question out, but I'm definitely giving it a 2 out of 10 on the possibility scale. You know,
and then, I mean, to your point of this being the 30th season and who knows how the money's going to get split. Like, now that we have this redemption house aspect, which we opened the episode on, it is like, you know, TJ shows up and says, you know, you don't know when, you don't know how, but you're going to get a chance to enter the game and get your revenge. And I do think somehow the bigger prize money is going to be lumped into whenever, like, the announcement of this is going to be lumped into somehow the people who return. And maybe there's more money on the line because they'll add a spot in the final or something like that. You know, like there's just a lot of variables right now.
Yeah, I genuinely have not been able to speculate what I really think is going to happen with the Redemption House, because there's so much that's up in the air. And that's what I think is going to be great about this whole season as a whole, because normally they try to force these themes and things like this onto the season. But now it's kind of open fire. Anything can happen. And so whatever MTV wants to make happen is a possibility, unlike Bloodlines or unlike even something like Free Agents. This is the most of a free for all. So any stupid twist that they think of the day, the night of, or the night before, they can throw in there and it's justified.
No, totally agree. And the only thing I can really speculate here or predict is that out of the people in the house at the top of the show, what is it? LaToya, Darrell, Simone, Shane,
Devin and Amanda.
Darrell clearly has the best chance to have an actual like impact in the game when,
oh my god, yes,
if they're allowed to return.
Oh my god, all right, we'll get to it. But I mean, Darrell seems to also be the only person in the house who cares about going back, you know? Everybody else is having
hottest take of the night, I know.
Everybody's like lounging around doing raps, which we'll get to, but he's working out. He's got his mind is so focused on this game and his family, and everybody else is like worrying about braids.
Even though Tony is the only one who has children. So I don't know what Darrell is talking
about. Oh, that's true. Tony is a dad and Tony's a dad.
Switching gears though to the people who are actually still in the game in the traditional sense that we're aware of, I think Brittany gets a little scene here with Corey where she shows some real potential, you know, sort of saying, I'm rooming with the rookies, but I know this about politicking. And what do you make of Brittany's chances on this season?
Brittany was one of my least favorite contestants on her season of Are You the One? She was like nails on a chalkboard, made absolutely no sense in any of her arguments, and she made for unexpected, unreliable, but often fascinating TV because she makes no sense. And so I think this was the first time that I've really witnessed her. I thought she was mostly just flirting, but it did seem like she was trying to find a way to keep Corey in her back pocket, and I don't know. I don't think it's a good move. There's way better people in this house that she should be talking to. If she had any sort of perception of what the vibe was, everybody hates Corey. And so to choose him to be your ally, or I think they're going to hook up at some point during the show. That's why they showed Chuck. That's why they made it sound like they had this future together. But I feel like I saw a girl with long dark hair kissing Corey in one of the previews. And I think it's Brittany. And yeah, I think this is more so an intro to a potential fourth on his bedpost than it is a politic move.
See, now that's really interesting. I thought I saw this scene and I felt like, okay, there's a reason we're seeing it. So from your perspective, the reason is because it's like foreshadowing a romance. For me, I was like, this looks like not a winner's edit for Brittany, but like a strong player's edit of like, I get the game. You're going to get a soundbite of that. And like, here's how I want to spend the money. I'm focused on winning. But since you bring up Chuck, so for anyone who didn't watch Are You the One, Chuck and Brittany were not a perfect match, but have been together since the show, which was at least 2 years ago, like something like that. A long time.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't living here. So yeah, 2 years ago. Also, just to throw this fun fact about Brittany. Sure, she was Miss Teen Hawaii 2006. But also, yeah, you pointed out last week that they don't even mention that she was on Are You the One. But she was very much famous for having extremely public sex with Chuck on a couch while the entire house watched. Like, that was her claim to fame in my... That's, if you were to ask me, oh, who was the girl who stole Hannah's boyfriend and then they had sex in front of every single person in the house and didn't care? Oh, Brittany. That was her. She's going to be great on The Challenge.
I agree. And it's almost interesting like that they're trying to sort of change her image. But we got a question from Jamie Lefevre who says, how are Brittany and Chuck still together? And I have a little bit of news on that. I don't know if you're up on Brittany's Twitter. But I have said this maybe last week or 2 weeks ago. Like, I always check in on Brittany. Not always. But she's one of the people when I like decide to get into an internet black hole of procrastination. Like, I'm going to see... Are they still together? What about Hannah and Zach? What's going on with, you know, all of
the important stuff. You get your news, get your fix.
Yeah, no, this is like she said, like important things are like politicking. And this is politics to me. So I noticed that Jennifer from Real World wrote, bro, my ex is a pathetic piece of shit. Okay, I'm done. She was dating. I don't even remember his name from the Real World, her Real World season.
This most recent one?
Yeah, God, I can't remember.
Yeah,
I'm not caught up.
I gave up when it was Ammo's
season.
This
is Bad Blood, yeah. That was big. Go Big or Go Home.
Yeah, and that was tough. That was a rough watch. but so, we have Kayla now, so praise the Lord.
So Jen was from Real World Bad Blood and her ex was on with her, but then they turned out to be fine and she started dating Robbie. No, that Robbie was her original ex. Now I'm like trying to think. All right. Robbie was her original ex and he was cast on the show and she arrived as his Bad Blood. And then she started dating, one of the other people's Bad Bloods, actually Mike from Are You the One, who then got cast on The Real World.
Ugh.
Yeah, right. Isn't that fun?
He sucks so much. Didn't he like hit Amanda and he's still on all these shows. It's a dark, dark world. And this is just the beginning.
Well, he was actually also sent home from that season. So I don't think he's going to be back.
Oh yeah. Didn't he excuse himself because he knew that he was going to be a racist.
Yeah. If you like say the N word, it's a problem.
Yeah, go home, man.
News to some people. So Jennifer wrote, bro, my ex is a pathetic piece of shit. Okay, I'm done. And then Taylor from Are You the One, who was dating Dre, says, so is mine. Shrug emoji. And Brittany gets involved and said, I third this. And I go to myself, what?
What?
Are they done? Because I hadn't seen any photos of them recently. Because I'm a psycho.
I'm sure they're done. I'm sure. But sorry, continue.
No, you're fine. So on 7/23, this is now 4 days ago since we're recording at 11:28 a.m. She wrote, I wish I got dumped before I went on The Challenge. Oh, how differently I would have played and how much more fun I'd have. Double devil emoji. Not one, but two devil emojis. Hashtag till next time.
Oh.
So it appears that, and then someone, a fan wrote, didn't see that coming at all. Hashtag turn up. That's what I want. If I break up with someone, please text me. Hashtag turn up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I would text the producer and be like, I'm coming back next season. Get the couch ready. Like, it's going to be
hashtag
a great time.
Turn up.
Turn up.
And Brittany says, yeah, me neither, LMAO. Which, like, something tells me you're, like, not laughing your ass off about this, but who am I?
So, I think she totally kisses Corey and thinks the camera doesn't catch it.
I don't know. I think she stays true and gets dumped and is, like, in regret for how she played.
That's more boring to me.
Then there's a couple things that happen over the 25th and 26th. She writes, now that I can finally eat what I want without hearing a guilt trip for having good metabolism and having that joy of life, huggy emoji, tongue out emoji, okay sign emoji. And I'm like, is this about Chuck? Is this about, I don't know what that's
about. She's about to have her own Eat, Pray, Love moment. She's going to backpack in Europe by herself, eat all the food, probably not pray much, but also just have a lot of fun. This is the precursor. We're witnessing it all. You're making history, Brittany.
Eat, breakdown on Twitter, love. That's what I hope happens.
Okay, so speaking of travel, CT finally is able to get into the country with his non-faulty passport anymore. Apparently, he's been wearing the same clothes for days. And I really loved how he like tried to get people. Or who is it? Jemmy said his feet smell. The first thing she says to him is, "Bet your feet smell bad." Or something like really unnecessary and perfect. So
Jemmy
he comes
had two
in.
Moments on this episode, and they were both flawless.
You love that girl. You always talk so highly of her, and she is low on the totem pole of interest to me. But anyways, let's get talking about how CT comes in and has the fanfare, and basically Brianna is there to follow him around and hold his cape.
Yeah, people thought Brianna was like a PA who was like accidentally caught in the scene, and it hurts me because I love Brianna. I think Brianna was a standout on her season of Are You the One, and she got really screwed over. So like, I was actually happy to see her get a second chance, although it doesn't look like it's going to be that easy of a ride for her.
No, I liked when later in the episode. Well, I love Brianna as well, and I thought she had a really good chance with what's his name, Brandon, on the last season. But if he hadn't just sucked so much, because I think he wasn't a big threat to a lot of the dudes, so they weren't going to get thrown in a lot. And she's pretty strong, and so I thought that she really got the short end of the stick in her past season. So to see her come back is really awesome. But when the funny thing is, when you and Brian were talking about how you saw a Brianna in the preview, I thought you were talking about Jenna's cousin from the bakery. And I was like, guys, why are you so excited about the bakery girl coming back? She's the most boring TV ever. So I'm really, really relieved that this is Brianna from Are You the One and not Jenna's cousin who shares a boyfriend with Jenna once in a while.
Yeah. And just to jump ahead, like, I'm a little bit nervous about Brianna's odds. I'm not 1,000% sure. You know, she's a pretty small girl, and I'm just not 1,000% sure on how she'd fare on a one-on-one physical elimination, depending on, we don't know what the elimination is going to be or who she'll be facing, but it looks like it's going to be out of Jemmy, Brittany, Jenna, or Veronica, and I don't know that I love her odds against any of the four of them.
I can see her holding her own against pretty much all but Jenna. Veronica didn't do I was so happy that Veronica's back. She's an OG. Reason I started watching the show was all the shit she would stir. But during Champs versus Pros, she it didn't look like she was even trying. So she was the first one out. So I would love it. I would love it if Brianna kicked Jemmy's ass, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I just think eliminations tend to favor size and experience, and Brianna doesn't have either, but hopefully, you know, she's got heart, she's smart as hell, so hopefully we'll see what happens. It should be interesting. I know we saw CT in the preview. I was kind of surprised that anybody was surprised on the show to see him come back. Like, there was a chance MTV was going to just, like, let him stop at the border, and that would be it.
I liked how a lot of the women, like Cara, was really excited that he was back. Camilla was down for it. A lot of the female vets, like the true vets, were pumped. But how upset Leroy was, you could just see his face completely fall, because without CT there, someone like Leroy, who also fits that really big, strong archetype, would fare well. But now he's got some much thicker competition. And I think, yeah, the vets are cool because they know that he's probably going to work with them. But if I was on that show, I wouldn't be happy that CT's back. I would be pulling a Leroy and thanking God that he got stuck at the airport.
And I do love how Leroy is always the one in these seasons who, like, if something unfortunate happens, someone gets DQ'd or has to go home or gets injured, he's always the one who's, like, giving it to the camera straight, like, I'm not upset. Good. One less person I have to beat. Like, get him out.
Yeah, he's so great. He's an opportunist. But he also seems to be good, has to have a good social game. So, like, if people still like him after he's glad they got sent home for breaking their foot or something, how more power to Leroy.
All right. So the other thing, big issue we have to tackle here this episode is honestly, like, there are two drinking game, drinking games, that are just like built into this season so far. And one of them is anytime they exhaust a storyline between Corey and the three women he has hooked up with. And the second one is every time Tori or Derek call each other boyfriend or girlfriend.
Oh,
and I'm equally as frustrated with both.
I will be so drunk within minutes.
Yeah. No one do it. It's going to kill everyone. I don't want to be responsible.
Do your liver a favor and don't do this. But yeah, so the first offense is Kayla is having a chat with Jenna, and I guess Corey comes over and is it a cereal bowl or something that she's drinking out of? And this is straight out of like fourth grade snack time. He grabs it. She like chases him and tries to drink the bowl and then offers to what, baby bird it? And really sincerely looks like she would have done it. Oof. Kayla, come on.
There's a moment where you can hear Jenna's eye roll in her, the tone of her voice when she's like, go get it. Like when Corey takes the bowl, it's exactly what you said, like straight out of elementary school. And Jenna's like, ugh, go ahead, go play, go flirt.
And Jenna is, I want Jenna to win this season. She's my winner pick.
Boom.
She's over. I want her to win. I think she's being set up well. She doesn't play too dirty. So this is like her season for the winning. I will get into why I love her a little bit more, because like even when she's like, do you want me to go? I'll go. she's always there, but not really creating the problems. She's just like watching the clock start ticking on the bomb. She knows it's going to go down and she's like having fun with it. Because moments after Corey starts flirting with Kayla and Kayla's like, I thought I was different. I think I'm special. We cut to him being in the kitchen telling Anissa that he cheated on his girlfriend just to be with her. And it looks like they're kissing. Anissa on Twitter will preach to the high heavens that they did not kiss. They were just talking close. But yeah, they're kissing in the kitchen. And Jenna, again, is there making a little gremlin face, like scurrying through past that massive blue garbage can that sits behind them in like every shot.
Well, the thing that frustrates me the most about this situation, besides it's overplaying, is that it's like Corey is trying to garner sympathy for having gotten the attention of like three badass women. Like, you know, it's like, I don't feel bad for you, sir. Like, you are lucky as hell that these women even looked at you. And the only thing that makes these scenes slightly worth it are, especially because before I saw the episode, I was inundated with tweets and messages that Mitch Watch has made a triumphant return this season. And we get, I think, a Mitch Watch that I didn't even know about when it happened on the season, of Corey and Anissa like moving in for a hookup and Mitch's face just like front and center. Talk about gremlin face.
Oh, just sweaty as ever, red. He's got that like that drunk glow. His one eye is closed. It is Mitch in peak form, just standing behind Corey while Corey does his thing by himself. It is like, I know we're supposed to be reminiscing about Corey's past, but it really brought me back to why Mitch deserves another chance on this show. He's front and center and he's perfect. And I don't know, bring Mitch back. We need him back.
Let's start the campaign. Get it trending.
Everybody, please get, where's a crazy sports mom? We need your help. We need you. And to get all the other soccer moms to get Mitch, get your kids in the minivan and get them to drive down to Viacom and tell them what we need. And it's Mitch. All right.
What a pull. I love that. The other thing with the Kayla thing, underreported, not really being covered on the show, Kayla has a boyfriend. So it's like,
what?
Yeah, Kayla's boyfriend who used to date Jenna, who was also on Dating Naked.
No.
You know, true love.
No. Why don't they find somebody else? Oh, no. Jenna, you're dating your cousin's friends, your shower buddy's friends. Come on. Oh,
what I don't understand about the situation is like, for Kayla, like, I get why she's pissed and wants to have, like, the revenge of, like, you know, she feels embarrassed. Trust me, like, I've done worse things over feeling embarrassed than wanting to vote somebody in a game show. But I don't know why I said that, but, like, I get it. I get embarrassed. It's bad being humiliated, especially on national television. That I don't know what it's like, but, you know, whatever. But you got to imagine her boyfriend's watching this being like, are you sure you're over him?
I'm still here. I'll take my clothes off and go in the woods again if that will bring you back.
It's an open, she said, describes it as an open wound. Like, how many days were they even together? And I understand, he made false promises and she had real feelings for him. Fine. But, like, pick it up and get going. Like, girl.
She's super childish. She's actually grown on me a lot this season. Actually, over the course of her time on MTV, I've liked her more. She was pretty insufferable with the way she handled the Dionne stuff during her season. And then last season, all this Corey stuff was a bit nauseating by the end of it because it was so big, but it seemed to happen in such a short amount of time that from a viewer standpoint, it doesn't make sense. But, like, I don't know, when you're in these intense situations and you have your person and you're, like, having sex and it's, like, emotional but also physical, and then suddenly you're dropped right away, to come back, it definitely stirs things up. And Corey does himself zero favors in any of these situations with Anissa, with Kayla, with Camilla, but especially with Kayla, who seems to be the most emotionally fragile of the three. To give her an inch is to give her a mile. And so, especially a drunk Kayla, drunk off cereal milk, she's going to be a really easy target. So I feel a little bit bad for her because he's just screwing this girl over and over and over.
Speaking of relationships that seem to be making more of relationships than they are, we have to talk about either Tarek or Dory. I'm voting Dory because
they're
gonna be super forgettable.
We have to use Dory H.
Freaking love that. Dory H. I went immediately after I spoke with Brian last week to Instagram and found almost no evidence of them being together. Couple pictures here and there, almost nothing else. And I noticed last week that when Derek goes in to kiss her, she kind of gives him half cheek. And then this week when Derek goes up to kiss her, she's not reciprocating the kiss. Like, her face is just there, but her lips are not moving. Always extremely awkward. My girlfriend, my ride or die. And I thought this, like, we'll have a baby if we win thing was, like, a cute and funny conversation. Like, we won't be on Challenge 31 because we'll be having our baby. But there is somebody wrote to us. For some reason, I put the question the wrong. Oh, here.
My tinfoil hat is still on, by the way.
I'm sorry?
My tinfoil hat is still on. I think I know what's coming.
Oh, perfect. So Caitlin Gabbard says, after a quick stalking of Tori's social media, let's be honest, there's no such thing as a quick stalking.
Deep dives only.
Yeah. It appears her and Derek have already broken up. Sorry if you've already heard about this and I'm the millionth person to tell you. Also, never possible. Please tell me everything all the time. Their relationship on the show has never seemed super genuine to me anyways, and it came out of nowhere. I mean, even Allie was unaware. Thank you. Tinfoil hats on. Did they plot a fake relationship for more screen time / future possible exes seasons? Or am I reaching / have too much time to think about this? Thanks. Love the podcast.
Wow. I
digest, feel it, think about it, be it.
I mean, it is such calculation to fake this much, but also I totally believe it. Everyone on this show is lying. We're going to get into how much bullshit Camilla is spewing about the Bushes. But, like, this is also such a good point. They are laying it on so thick. Tori hasn't said a single sentence that involves Derek where she doesn't mention the boyfriend, doesn't mention their baby, doesn't mention their marriage, doesn't mention their boyfriend, girlfriend, the love. There's no one more important to me than my boyfriend. There's no one more important to me than the person that I love, which is Derek H. And so they're really trying to make it a plot point. And I can totally, because if they're broken up already, they're both strong-ish competitors, especially Tori. So they would be a good pair to come back together for X's. So, and I don't know. They definitely do have much stronger friend vibes, like you were saying. What do you think?
So the only thing I can think about is if they were a legitimate couple.
Yeah, I mean, until that cast preview for this season, I forgot that Derek really did get into some like angry, aggressive altercations on his season of the show. Because, dude, this guy seems like a straight up puppy dog. They are just nonstop love fest. I am ready for that to change. Tori is already one of the best things about this season, and I'm ready for her to like rock it on her own.
And I think part of Derek's frustration on Are You the One is that he didn't really have any love connections. And so I think like now he's probably mellow and happy if he's with Tori. I mean, he definitely seems way more into her, whether it's real or not, than he is into him, or she is into him. And that's just based off of getting up close and personal, analyzing their kisses, unfortunately. I wish I wasn't.
I have not zoomed in, and I will not. So I am taking your word on the lip status.
All right. So one thing I do want to talk about, shifting gears into Camilla and Corey's beach romp. I will say, and there was some big drama this week because of another podcast that I won't mention, because I'm not going to say really nice things about them, and I don't, you know, want to give bad press. Even though, as Brian and I have said before, we are no press. So there was an incident with Anissa where Anissa started tweeting. Actually, I first saw it quickly, and I'm so self-absorbed. I thought it was potentially about us. And then I realized, oh, wait, like, we didn't say this, and she doesn't care or listen to us. I was like, I never said anything bad about Anissa. But basically, another podcast, she said, body shamed her, and a couple other vets got on board, you know, shit talking this. And I went and listened to an episode of the podcast that I normally don't listen to, not because I don't support it. There's plenty of room in the world for multiple challenge podcasts. More the merrier.
Sure, but they said.
But I don't even really know what they were talking about. And I don't know if I listened to the right episode with Anissa. But I don't know that I've ever, like, been more physically offended and upset by things that were said on this podcast about women, about ammo. It was just pretty disgusting and ridiculous. And Tony was on, a couple other people were on. It was really interesting to get the information, but just ultimately, I almost didn't get through the episode.
Tony's like the physical embodiment of Trump locker room talk. You know, he's just so scummy, and he feels so justified in it, and I am so done with his everything. But continue. So I'm not at all surprised that he's on the podcast where women get slut and body and like gender shamed, like eat shit.
Yeah, he said something, Tony said something about like having like a double or quadruple triangle of like women on the show, and Jenna and Jemmy, and like he even was like, yeah, once Jemmy got involved, like Bananas had to call me and be like, no, that's enough. And he's like, yeah, save me. And it's just like, this is what I said last week, like Tony being a complete degenerate father and partner to one of his two baby mamas is like not what's entertaining to me. And so Tony then like tweeted like, everyone's got to relax, like the quadruple triangle is a joke. It's like, well, none of it sounded like a joke. So maybe you just have to work on your timing and delivery. But he sucks anyway. So one of the reasons I bring up the podcast is some of the information I think was interesting. It just didn't need to be couched in sexism and like gender phobia, transphobia.
So
just was ridiculous.
Yeah, so we don't need to listen to the podcast, but you're going to tell us why it's important to this conversation.
Right. So one of the things that Banana said about Camilla, which I think was accurate, is that Camilla does not own her shit. Like Camilla, he was saying Ashley does something and Ashley will completely own it. Camilla will do something and deny, deny, deny. And the reason that Bananas is aware of that is because he does the exact same damn thing. Not that he said it. And I thought it was like absolutely ridiculous at this point for Camilla to be trying to deny that she... Like, she creates this whole narrative. Like, we were, the only reason we were together was an accident.
Oh my God. Well, okay. So, for those who need a little refresher, we are intro to like Jemmy leading this troop to run down to the beach and see where Corey and Camilla have gone. And we get this like really a beautiful night vision camera or this like creepy security lens. And you suddenly see like Camilla and because Nelson's with them, Camilla and Corey like clutching themselves, running up the stairs. And it is so clear that they were caught having sex. They are banging in the bush and there's no way around it. Like when I loved when I think it was Nelson who was like, he was pumping his hips so hard like a little jackrabbit. And I just, and like, I love the Corey hate this season. I think it's, I only really kind of liked him when he had Mitch on Bloodlines, because that was a terrible season and he was like kind of a light in the darkness. But like him on The Real World with that horrible abortion episode, that was like miserable to watch. Then there's like all of the way he's treating these women. And I love like Anissa coming for the, with the dirt, being like, you got a small dick and no one cares about you. And like, I loved that. And I love
that. We don't normally do hashtags, but I think the hashtag is banging in the bush.
Banging in the bush. Oh, absolutely. But like, Anissa, I'm with Brian. I used to think that I didn't like her. I always thought, why is she here? Why is she here? But dude, she's so good on this season. She doesn't let him get away with his shit. She's like rounding the troops with Marie slamming that knife into the fruit salad. Like they are coming for blood and she's leading the troops and I love it. And the producers are also on her side because Corey is caught trying to say like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Like we were just hanging out, maybe like talking down the beach. And the producer's like, but hold on. Look at this video of you not doing what you said you were doing. And Corey just has nothing to hide. He doesn't say they were having sex, but he doesn't not say it. Whereas Camilla, the next morning at the breakfast table, is just saying like, oh, people are going to talk. They're going to say what they want, whatever they want to say. It doesn't matter what's true or not. They're just going to say it. And she's in such intense denial over the fact that she was caught red-handed. And you know that she, from that thing where they talk about like behind the scenes how she was banging bananas on their exes season where they won, she's like, oh yeah, we were gonna go air quotes do laundry and they were just always having sex. You know that she's a little gremlin scurrying around just to get some.
The headline from this to me is that you might be the only person who has a memory of something Marie did on this season.
Well, Marie is now fulfilling my old Anissa slot, I think. Like, loud. She's a messy bitch who lives for the drama, but, like, no one invited her to come.
Aren't we all?
I wish I was messier. I wish I was Marie levels of messy, because, like, she's there. She's not, like, wildly athletic. She's not necessarily too dramatic, but she has this like very intense, distinct voice. And she says these like one liners in the background with such vitriol that I'm just like, what? What is going on with this woman? And so Marie Watch is where I'm at right now. I'm at Marie Watch based off the fruit salad. The fruit salad stab where she says, like, we're going to rally the motherfucking troops. And then she slams the knife into the thing last episode. Sorry, I love and I hate her.
Okay, no apology necessary. I think that's a strong contention for the Mitch Watch of the season, besides actually Mitch being on this episode. But we have so much more to get to. We are crushing this episode. I'm loving getting your perspective. But we are rapidly getting to the real juice of this episode, which didn't even happen in the actual house. But first, we have to get through talking about the challenge, the show's namesake. No big deal. So it is called Cool Under Fire. And it's basically sitting on a ledge, two heats, and in Big Brother style, the wall tips forward and you have to keep your booty on this tiny ledge while the other people are launching dirty, rotten tomatoes at you.
First of all, the challenge should have been, I'm dying up here, because it's like a stand-up comedy comedian getting shit thrown at him, like tomatoes. Would have been way funnier. But what did you think about when I saw it? I could not fathom what strategy would actually help me stay on the platform, or what body type, or how one person could benefit over another. I couldn't find a rhyme or reason to how to be good at this challenge. What do you think?
Yeah, so usually on these challenges on other shows, like, big people don't do well, that it behooves, you know, it's the smaller people have the advantage. But I can't even say that here because, you know, big dudes won out here. And Tori even notes, like, you know, big booty Judy's had an advantage, which I don't really see how you could be stable. The only things I could think of are, you know, being able to focus, being calm under pressure, like any sort of endurance challenge. Like, it's definitely not a comfortable position to be in, but also, like, being rock solid, having balance. I still don't really understand how CT pulled this one out. I know he jokes that all he does is sit around, so it was perfect for him, but it's a little different than me sitting on my couch.
Yeah, there was no rhyme or reason to how to make this work. It did seem in the second heat, if you spread your legs and, like, blare your crotch to the tomatoes, you would stay longer, because, like, Tony spread eagle, Tori spread eagle, everybody's just, like, fully spread and they're staying. But I was thinking too, the tomatoes do make a bit of a difference, because if you get the wall behind you hit, it's going to drip down your back, which makes it lubricated, and then it's going to drip down to your butt, and you're just going to be squishy tomato slide right off. So I think at first I was like, oh, the tomato thing is stupid. You just shouldn't do it. Win the favor of everybody in the house. If they're not in your heat, it doesn't matter. So I would have pulled what Jenna did and just purposely miss and make it very clear that I was not trying to hit anybody to keep my hands clean. But basically, yeah, some people, like Derek H, Tori has this confessional where she says how she wants to aim for all the other dudes so her boyfriend can be safe and she can keep him in the house and he's totally going home next week. But instantly he falls within maybe a second or two. So, and also Leroy falls. I'm trying to think of what other, like, the tall, big dudes just, like, eat it right off the bat. Jenna falls within minutes. So these, like, taller, lankier people might actually be the ones who have the downfall, literally.
Yeah, two things really stuck out for me during this challenge. The first is that Banana's main target that he identifies is Nelson, which surprised me a little bit. I mean, Nelson is a strong competitor, but then as the episode unfolded, I realized, okay, Banana's can't go after, like, Derek K and CT without, you know, quote unquote, showing his hand. So I guess of, like, all the rookies, Nelson is the one you're going to attack. But, like, big ups to Nelson from Bananas here for being an identified target. And the other thing is, I thought Cake by the Ocean was a weird song choice for the tomato montage.
I liked it. It reminded me of Butts because, like, Cake. And I thought that was very fun. You watched, especially because, I mean, a lot of the people have their names written on their butts. So you look to their butts when they fall and they're in the sea. And
are you going to get matching shorts that say Cohen also in addition to the jersey?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to design those myself. things that I really liked from this pretty stupid challenge, I really liked Kara getting hit in the face multiple times. That was fun. I understand why she's here on this season. Would love it if she wasn't, but this will do, you know? Having Anissa, my newfound fave, chuck some tomatoes at her face is dope. And then I also really liked all of the... It was funny that Tori and Derek H were talking about having babies. Meanwhile, Tori is just getting, like, tomato after tomato, as she described, she's being shot in the uterus, which I wrote down, oh, a shooteress, or a twat shot. She was the queen of the twat shot.
One thing we have to talk about here is your newfound fave's downfall. Another strong performance from Anissa. Edward Morris, though, says, should we hold TJ at fault for not specifying that the guys were done and not the winner and not the women, leading to Anissa grabbing the rope?
No.
Interesting.
I don't think so.
you have to wait. So, I mean, this happened to Dario and Rafi. Is his name Rafi, the brother? Dario and his brother lost because they celebrated too quickly. They assumed it was over when it wasn't. So leave TJ out of this, my friend.
I don't
Please
know.
Please rate and review 5 stars, but leave TJ alone.
So you can't say you couldn't see who else was still in it, because I know, like, you know, someone from the peanut gallery shouted out like 3 guys left, 3 girls left, like something like that. So like nobody on the wall knows who's still in the game. You can't really look and see down the line without risking falling. And when TJ yells, you just hear someone drop, and TJ yells, "We have our winners." I'm not saying you blame TJ, because you should always wait until you're safe, like 100% declared. But I can see why Anissa completely misunderstood this directive.
I believe that she's sincere, but who did she think fell? There's 5 people sitting up there, 2 men, 3 women. It's not like you can't. I mean, maybe she's staring off into the abyss to find her Zen place to keep her put, but she's sitting pretty much directly next to Camilla. Tori is not that many bodies away. If she was to use her peripheral vision at all, she would know that there's still 3 women sitting up there. So I am sad, but not that sympathetic.
Yeah, no, I think they did the right thing. I think there was no way she couldn't have been DQ'd here, but I just don't think that it seemed like they had any idea of who was still up and who wasn't, and that you'd expect somebody 30 feet up on a tilt trying not to fall and die, because that's what I would assume would happen if I were up there, that you could like hold them responsible for knowing. One thing I loved is somebody asked if we were impressed with Nicole coming in the final 4 here, and Randy Newpool says, "No, she's an expert at just sitting there and blending into the wall."
Yeah, I was going to say, who?
I don't want to totally shame her. I don't know why she hasn't had a moment of time on the show. I'm not upset by it, but this is a good showing for her to come in the top 2.
Yeah, and I mean, last episode she said, "Everybody's expecting me to be the first one out. They think I'm a target." And so for her to win this one is fine. I've never not liked her. It's always jarring to see her, the many faces of Nicole, and like reset and get accustomed to one. And then suddenly the next scene, you have to redo the whole thing over and be like, still her, it's still her, there's still her, it's still her. But yeah, so she wins. Who else wins? We've got a Camilla win. We've got a Tori win, which is awesome. The other female who is a winner is Cara Maria, of course, tomato to the face. Then
resilient.
Derek, so resilient. Derek and Nelson win round 1. And who
Wait,
wins
which Derek?
Round? The one that I care about, Derek K. Derek K.
The only one who could have possibly won.
Oh, Derek K. Also a father. Just to throw that one out there. Derek the dad. We'll call him Derek the dad.
So 50% of the male winners were fathers, just to be clear.
Yeah, because we've got CT and Bananas as well.
And one thing, so the winners are able, we get a first peek sort of at how the structure of the season is going to go. The winners choose 1 guy and 1 girl to put up for elimination and can choose anyone who's not safe. So anyone who's not in the winner slot is up, doesn't have to be from the bottom group. What did you think about this?
I think it's fine. I think it's great. I think it's a pretty standard issue form of the show. So it's not something wildly outrageous. It is something that always causes drama, because you do have to sit in the room with everybody and list the names, and it becomes a bit of a numbers game as the game progresses. So to establish something that's familiar to most people and known to stir the pot is only going to get better and better as the numbers dwindle. So I think this is a great classic challenge voting situation.
Yeah, totally agree. Before we get, I know it's like the decision-making process is a little split with what happened in the Redemption House. Before we get to the Redemption House, let's just wrap up the decision-making process on who to send in. I was pretty surprised with the vets' mentality here, but once they explained it, I totally understood. I did not foresee Corey sending in Darrell to have sort of the backlash that it had, that he showed his cards, quote unquote, that he doesn't want to go against the best. And classic Leroy says, like, his mistake was saying it out loud.
But actually, I mean, Corey and Camilla might just be a match made in heaven, because they are both needing to shut their mouths. Because if you send Darrell home without explanation, fine. But to straight up say, I don't think I'm going to be able to beat you later because you're so strong, is instantly going to send the message to the other strong guys in the house. You're in the same boat as Darrell, who I just sent home, so you're targets to me. So when they were bringing that up in the room, and then it once again in deliberations, I mean, it made perfect sense. You got some blood on your hands, and the exact same type of blood is sitting in a circle choosing whether or not to vote people in. So you're screwed, Corey.
Totally agree. This was another bit of Bananas hypocrisy, though, because, like, tell me Bananas wouldn't have done the same thing.
Oh, Bananas would have done the same thing, but Bananas has a social game because he doesn't think just with his dick, and so he is able to convince these other people, for the most part, that they need to be loyal to him, whereas Corey is beginning to be more and more of a one-man island, and he's just so transparent in all of his intentions, both with these women that he's, like, very poorly seducing, and these challengers who he clearly wants to vote in. And he's very arrogant in the way that he approaches these challenges, thinking that he's going to win. But he kind of sucked in the final last time. And I don't know, someone online was criticizing how he's really just, like, got no, he's all upper body, he's all, like, arms and chest and really not much else, which is why he just, like, toppled right off of that platform and putting him in the situation. So he's a bit Humpty Dumpty. Oh my God, yeah, he's totally Humpty Dumpty. Oh, Humpty Dumpty couldn't lift anything. He's just little strings attached to an egg. But basically, yeah.
The thing.
Sorry, continue.
No. The thing with Corey here is, yeah, I agree. Bananas would have finessed the situation better, like, somehow convincing people that, like, he couldn't trust Darrell for some bullshit reason, even though it would have just been for fear, as everyone should fear Darrell. So everyone just sort of kind of agrees to send in Corey. You have Nelson, who's amazingly saying, let's stick to tradition. He's using things like earn their stripes. I do look forward to hearing how Brian reacts to this sort of thing. I know he loves that Nelson has a reverence for the challenge, but it's like, for Nelson to be angling to throw in the rookies and Are You the One people, a little strange, like, a little soon for Nelson, in my mind.
Slow your roll, bro. Yeah, so and
it makes sense that he it just makes sense that he doesn't want to throw in Corey, because, look, at the end of the day, Corey's going for these big targets and it's not Nelson, but, like, it just was, like, a weird way to rationalize it for me.
Yeah, but it really seemed that it was Corey or either of the two rookies who had to, as Nelson put it, earn their stripes. So it was either Derek H and Hemo as the options between here. Whereas for the females, if it was someone, everyone basically said, Brianna? Okay, cool. Let's vote Brianna in. I liked Cara Maria's rationale, because I remember that season with, I believe it was Rivals, where she ended up being the alternate for Cook, with Cook, and they got voted in to absolutely every single one of the eliminations, and they ended up coming in second in the whole game. So I can see where that mentality comes from the lady side. Throw in the new girl. It's easy. Our hands are still clean.
It's super interesting because it's like this is so stupid, but with, like, hazing, it's like, in order for hazing to stop, people who were hazed have to be willing to not haze the next crop. And it's like Nelson and Cara are doing exactly the thing that they hated when it was done to them. Such is the challenge.
Kara's weeping in the corner when it happens to her, and then, like, Mr. Burns twiddling her fingers when she gets to do it to somebody else.
I was surprised here to see Camilla come out in such defense of Corey, and it's like, oh God, come on, ladies, like, get it together. Kara is saying, like, you said yourself, he was the worst thing for your game, and she's just, like, crazy rationalizing it to the point where she makes one of the stupidest votes in history, I think.
Yeah, so stupid. She
TJ here, it does have his hands a little dirty because he is, she's trying to say, I'm my own person. This is an individual game. Therefore, I can vote for whoever I want to vote for, no matter what these people think. And she hesitates for a moment. And TJ's like, you can do whatever you want. You know that, right? You can be your own person. You can vote for anybody. And so she thinks that, I think she thinks she's being cute. Do you think that when she's like, well, Nelson threw a tomato in my face, therefore he's the one who's getting my vote. Don't you dare both like throw tomatoes at me, Nelson or Hunter. Oh, it's Hunter. Sorry. Don't throw tomatoes at me, Hunter, or else you'll get my vote. Like, what did you think of how she handled the situation?
I mean, in true Camilla fashion, I think she handled it terribly. I think at first I was surprised that she's like, I'm going to vote for Corey because it doesn't make a difference. I thought that was a fine vote. And then she's like, but I do think Hunter should be the one to go in. And it's like, why do you call him out of nowhere? And then to finally switch your vote to Hunter just makes no sense because you show Corey a willingness to vote for him and Hunter. You basically voted for two people. And on top of that, Hunter is insane and like will hold this against you forever, even though you think you're just making a throwaway joke vote. Like, Hunter won't take that. You put his name into your mouth and Hunter's a crazy person. Kind of like Camilla.
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, there's no, they, oh, if they were rivals, they would be a good team.
Can you imagine?
I don't want to, but from
yeah, that's like a nightmare scenario. But question from Judah Ray on Mario. What do y'all think about Corey's strategy of going after all of the veteran powerhouses? Strategy or stupidity?
Stupidity. It's Wes. It's Jordan. It's people making these big ballsy moves to be seen and to kind of cement their status as an alpha when laying low and winning favor is totally going to get you further in the game. What do you think?
I agree with you, but we also don't see him like building any group. Like, he's just kind of a one-man island and he's just going to go down to the ship himself. Like, at least go in with the reinforcements. Like, if you're looking at the guys, like, Jordan, I don't know where he currently stands with Bananas, right? But he's been known to be a renegade, so at least maybe approach Jordan. Dario has been known to be a renegade against them. Like, I'm trying to look who else. Like, Ammo, why not? Why wouldn't he go against them, potentially? Like, Hunter, big guy, could do well in challenges, would definitely be on your side. Like, squad up and get some help.
It's ego.
Gonna, like, charge into battle.
He's got too big of an ego, and I think the ball is rolling way too fast down the hill that he can't even slow it down at all. So it's either keep moving at the pace you're going or I quit. He's really dug his grave in this one. I mean, even think about that season that Jordan was in a relationship or in a showmance with Laurel. They were alone the whole time. There was no one in the house that could gain an alliance with them, and they weren't trying to gain alliance. They were just saying, we'll win or we'll go home. And that's the kind of the mentality that I think Corey's forcing himself to have.
No, definitely agree. I think he's screwed. He's not long for this world or for this game. But one thing, and I just want to go into, let's hit all these questions before we go back to basically the situation that I'm avoiding talking about. Not that I don't want to talk about it. PJ Gahan says, who out of the eligible people up for elimination would you want to see go home the most? So basically we have Veronica, Derek, H, Leroy, Jemmy, Brittany, Jenna, and Dario up, where basically all we see in the preview is that they have to all pack their bags and they'll be choosing one of their fellow losers to go against Brown or Corey. There's some sort of XX card. And we'll see how that plays out. But who are you hoping to see go home of the people up for elimination?
Let's see. I would be very fine if Dario went home. I would really love it if Corey was the one who goes home, but I really don't think he's going to. I would love to see it for the guys. Dario, I don't think he contributes too much to, he's very middle of the road in everything. He has occasionally gotten into fights. He had that pretty lackluster romance with Ashley K. There's not much that we need to keep seeing from him.
and he's not necessarily physical or strategic enough to make as much of an impact as and a lot of the other people. And as for the women, I gotta say your girl Jemmy, because otherwise I think she's just gonna constantly be in the loser's bracket, and it's just a matter of time before she gets sent home.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I agree about Dario. I would like probably Dario to go home, or the guy. Oh no, Derek. I'll say Derek because of the whole Tori thing. I think Derek's most likely to go home, and I'm most interested in him going home. Unfortunately, sad to say. I really would be devastated if Leroy went home, and I'd be devastated if Brittany went home, because I think Brittany has potential to be great on the challenge, and I wouldn't want her to go out this soon.
Sorry, Brittany and Veronica and Leroy, keep them around if you can. I want Veronica to bring back some of what she used to have and prove that there's a reason she came back. And Brittany, similarly, but just prove that she can. I think she's going to be an interesting, fun part of the legacy if she can get past the first couple rounds.
Totally agree. Will Simon says, which rookies have surprised you so far and who's let you down?
Which rookies have let us down? There's only how many the rookies, there's three, right? We've got Tori, we've got Brittany, we got Ammo and Derek K and or Derek H. Anybody else?
I think that's it based on this season's definition of rookie.
I think Derek H has let me down a little bit in that he's such a puppy dog that it's very one note at this point. So if he was to show some fire, that would be fun. Ammo, I still have no real read on. He fills an interesting slot because he doesn't overtly look athletic. Similar to, and he is from like the queer world, so he fits that kind of Preston spot. And Preston was never interesting to me because I really like the people that are good, solid competitors that try and scheme. And I'm hoping that Ammo is able to rise to the occasion like he says he's going to in some of the previews and some of the confessionals from this episode. Tori and Brittany, I'm cool with. I think they're great.
Totally agree with your assessment there. So now let's get to the most notable drama and really unfortunate situation that brewed in the Redemption House. Before we get to it, though, just generally, I was pretty surprised to see how often we checked in with the Redemption House until this happened. And then I was like, oh, okay, this is why we saw so much of it. But do you think we're going to see so much of the Redemption House every episode moving forward? Or was this just because this incident occurred?
I think we are going to definitely check in, but not nearly as much as this, because this was explosive. And when I rewatched the episode, it made so much sense, the progression that they were building into in this house, where, first of all, Darrell is separating himself a bit from the house, which is why he's focused on the game, where you've got like Devin making funny, cute songs and everybody seems to be laughing. And then there is this sense of cabin fever that's building up when you see Simone doing that tarot card session. Like, by the time that happens, this is the second or third time we've checked in with them. And it seems like they're getting a little loopy, a little bit out of their sorts. And they seem to be drinking a ton, because the incident eventually happens on, I believe, is it a Tuesday teenies? So it must have been a Tuesday. They were having some martinis. And I really loved that. The Redemption House was so like cute and kind of fun until we get to this part where Simone comes into LaToya and Shane are hanging out in a room, and they are saying that they don't want to, I believe it's help grease her scalp a bit because it's dry from the way she's wearing her hair. And she's saying, Shane, you're a hairdresser, like, just do this thing. Like, and LaToya, you understand how like black hair works, like, help me out. And so, but they're both just like, no, we don't want to do it. So she's upset. Because apparently there's a confessional from Amanda saying how much she's really been pulling her weight in the house by cooking for everybody, doing a lot of the dishes, making sure the house doesn't look a mess, even though the house did look super shitty, like in terms of the state of it when we kept checking in. So I don't know how much of a good little housekeeper Simone is, but I digress. So she goes upstairs to essentially vent a little bit to Devin and Amanda on Tuesday Teenies. And Shane is shown like creeping in the background behind a bush, listening to Simone take out, air some grievances with him. But suddenly we cut to an hour later. Shane's face is covered in scratches. There, Devin's arm has a giant bite mark in it. Simone is screaming at Shane, saying that you put hands on me. I wouldn't be this upset if you didn't hit me, even though you're denying it. There's this giant glass bottle shattered on the floor. And as an audience member, all we've been given is that Shane, the hairdresser, didn't want to help her grease her hair. So this is 0 to 120 to 1,000. It was out of control. Did you understand, like, what was really even happening?
Definitely not. I speculate that Brian somehow knew this was going to happen and, like, told me he needed a sub because he didn't want to talk about this episode, even though he told me this a week ago. I thought it was very, very strange because the way that they have the cast sort of recounting it in snippets, and it doesn't actually make any sense to us as viewers, and they must have known that, and still, like, this is how they chose to air it. And they claim that this happened after, you know, producer said there's security here, but we're gonna leave without the cameras, which you'd think maybe would make sense for Redemption House, but I don't know of any show where they stop rolling cameras on you if you're potentially gonna still be on the show. Which
also
is like,
if you're drinking heavily and there's been like a sort of small tiff earlier in the day, like, you, this is the stuff that they live for in reality TV. You want to catch this kind of potential drama on camera. And when you've got Amanda in a house and you've got Simone, these little firecrackers, something's going to go down probably. And Devin's probably there stirring the pot. So, like, it makes so much sense if they're hanging out on the roof drinking, bring a camera. So that was my first suspect moment as well.
Yeah, Nick Sabetta said, how did MTV have enough cameras set up to catch Corey and Camilla go down to the beach but weren't able to actually film what happened between Shane and Simone?
Yeah, I mean, after doing a bunch of digging and sifting through my backpack for the receipts of the internet, there's a lot more to this situation, and it's much more unfortunate than I think MTV was willing to show in terms of both the racial dialogue that was apparently happening, violence against women there was, and potentially weapons involved. There was a lot of moving parts that even a big fight like the Devin and Adam fight, not Devin and Adam, CT and Adam fight, where CT looks like he's going to straight up murder him, that was more so just like pure anger. But there's a sense of malice and a really gross hostility that has been revealed to be the real root of this situation.
All right, so let's explore this to the extent that we can. Johnny has done some research. I have some stuff from Twitter. So try to, if you can, piece together what is being sort of reported and the internet is what happened.
So thank you to Alan Aguirre from Medium.com, who really pieced together through a bunch of different sources from Twitter, from Vevmo, from the challenge subreddit, from a lot of Instagram lives that were going on with like LaToya and Amanda. There were things that were revealed that apparently everybody went upstairs and things were not really heated, but Simone brought up the point that it would be in MTV's favor to start casting more diverse cast members for the show in terms of race. And I guess John A was brought up into the situation, and because I guess Shane reacted really profoundly to her saying that by starting to list off some of the people who were on the show. And I guess John A came up and there was something about how John A is biracial and she was raised by her white mother, and there's different ways to approach people who are of mixed race. And Shane had been
according to a tweet that Amanda posted, Shane was extremely fucked up. He had been drinking NyQuil. He was joining them for the martinis. There was a lot of booze in his system. You could really even see it in his eyes when you rewatch those clips. But he and Simone start getting in a heated conversation. It gets really intense. And Shane apparently smacks her in the face twice. And so in order to protect herself, she grabs that champagne bottle that we saw shattered on the ground, but instead she smashes it, but holds the handle and sticks out the glass to ward Shane away from her because she's worried that he's going to attack her again. And I assume at some point when she was pushing him off, that's where the scratch marks came. That part is a little bit confusing because Shane does have on his face many rips and nips from clearly fingernails. So Devin grabs Shane to keep him away from Simone, holds him into a chokehold, and according to Shane, he was unable to breathe, so that's why he bit him. But according to everyone else, he was just so full of rage that he took a giant bite into Devin's arm, and Devin eventually had to go to the hospital. So there is at the base of it, more racial tension that sparked this altercation. And Shane was sent home for hitting Simone in the face, as well as the bite that sent Devin to the hospital. And Simone got sent home because she was trying to use the champagne bottle as a weapon. So no one is necessarily telling us they have the full story, because if you were to go on Twitter, you would see that both Shane and Tony are really standing behind that Shane didn't touch her, but both LaToya and Amanda were as witnesses, and Simone, as one of the two parties involved, have really come forward and made it clear that Shane really seems to have a drinking problem, and they've gone into his legal past with his DUIs and he's got multiple of them. And Amanda was letting him know, like, you got sent home for straight up hitting a woman. LaToya was saying this can't be shown on TV because it's straight up scary to watch this small lady, because Simone is what, like 90 pounds? She's tiny. She's 5 foot tall, to be attacked by a dude. I'm not saying that there were cameras there, but even if there were, it would probably be something that they wouldn't want to show us, because of just, it would probably be pretty triggering for a lot of people.
So, thank you for that recap. Obviously a really sad and unfortunate situation, for all involved, including the audience. Just like kind of mind blowing. We've seen Shane get physical on these shows before. We've seen Simone get in people's face before. From what I've seen a little bit, as you said, Shane is adamantly denying that he hit her. Simone is saying that, like, of course this wasn't about the greasing her scalp issue, that happened way earlier in the day, and she can, like, normally just lets MTV edit it however they want, but she had to say that. And Devin has said that his stance in the fight has remained consistent. The fight between the two of them should have never turned physical. I don't know who took it from verbal to physical first. However, there was a fight and both were wrong. Two good people that made a mutual mistake. Both deserve to be sent home. I do think some people were saying, you know, this was favoritism to Simone, the fact that they just went, you know, they had Shane go home immediately, and that Simone got an extra day in the house and a conversation with producers. And to me, that supports the version of the story that you got from this reporter, or this, what is he, on media, what was it again? I'm sorry, the source?
He's medium.com.
Medium.com, okay, great. So, because to me, like, if Shane clearly hit her, he would go home immediately, and it seemed like there was more decision-making in terms of Simone having retaliated, and that, to me, would tend to support that story. Although, again, we can only sort of speculate and report on what's being thrown out there from everyone else. The one thing I will say that is, I'm just really finished with Tony, honestly.
Absolutely.
One of the things he said on the podcast that I was referencing earlier is that Shane, he keeps trying to get Shane to take steroids, and Shane just won't take steroids to like perform better on the challenge. And he was 100% serious. I don't care what he says now, if I haven't seen him address it. And it's like, forget trying to pressure your brother to take steroids, one. But two, knowing this had happened, this, they did this interview when they were in town for the premiere. So you knew this incident occurred, and you know your brother has anger issues, regardless of what happened, actually. You know, he's been sent home now from two challenges, as has Tony. And you're like, he should take steroids, and you're putting that out into the atmosphere, into the press. And you're going to then, the next episode, have your brother be accused of, you know, allegedly attacking someone. I'm just like, yeah. These brothers really have to get their act together, and the show is doing them no favors.
Yeah, they're definitely victims of, especially Tony, but the more we see of Shane, who up until I started learning the story, I was really bummed that he got sent home. And then, but they are victims of absolute toxic masculinity in like every way, shape, or form. The way Tony speaks to women, the things that Tony prioritizes in how you should act, hearing this story makes even more sense. I don't think he's very bright or intuitive to the experiences of other people, and he's a bit brainwashed by just absolute social norms, you know, in the most like 1950s base way of a boy should be like this and act this certain way and have this type of power, and a woman needs to be like this, and if she doesn't, then she needs to learn. And I just am really tired of how much and Corey too, to be real, they're just scummy dudes, and MTV keeps giving them all these chances. And as I was excited to see Shane on this season, and now I really will be upset if they choose to allow this behavior and then invite him back. You know, I think he's done. Do you think he's done with the challenge with MTV? Is he going to, do you think they'll bring him back ever after this happens?
Yeah. So Shelby Hindmiller said after Shane and Simone's exit, are they both done and will not be asked back? I would say based on this, Simone's more likely to be asked back, especially with like the treatment of how it was portrayed on television. I can't imagine Shane gets asked back after this situation and his prior showing on the season. It's another thing Tony said on the interview he did, that he like really hopes Shane becomes a regular. And I'm just like, how like tone deaf can
delusional.
You be to say these things? You know, I know it hadn't aired yet, but it wasn't like he was not trying to spoil the season. It was like, he just has no freaking clue. And I would really, really, again, I agree with you, be upset if he was asked back. Simone, I don't think adds a lot to the challenge, but I don't know that this, it should be the reason she doesn't get asked back. I think if she doesn't get asked back, it should be because she doesn't add much and she's not that athletic.
Yeah, I mean, also, I would be curious. I wonder if they were to say something like, if you go to a rehabilitation center and maintain some sobriety, we might let you back on the show. Much like, you know, how Tony saw that after that episode with Camilla, which if it had gone just a step further, could have been a situation like this when he got sent home and she got sent home. You know, he came back, was sober for a season, didn't do much better challenge wise, but definitely was not as like grossly offensive in the way he treated women. But I think there's enough people in the pools from Are You the One, The Real World, that could fill Shane's spot and be decent people. You know, I think we're going to be fine if he doesn't come back. I wouldn't want to come back if I was Simone. That sounds pretty freaking traumatizing to have. I read that one of her braids got ripped out. Like that's scary to think, to get to the point where you need to defend yourself with a piece of glass because you're worried that someone's gonna really hurt you. Like, I wouldn't want to go back, put myself willingly into a situation. And I don't know, I hope she's fine. Okay.
No, I totally agree with you. I don't know what Shane is really bringing that they would want to sort of seem like they're justifying his behavior here. I agree. My heart goes out to Simone. I can't imagine this situation. This should not happen. This is not entertainment. This is not good television. This is sad and hurtful and terrible. Just to reiterate that, as you were saying. The other thing Tony said in this interview is that every time he referenced getting removed from the house, he said that he got kicked out because of Camilla. He said that like 16 times. And it's like, these dudes, as you're saying, are just total boneheaded people. And it's really sad to see. And it's sad to see the repercussions of it, of ignorance and just like drunken bullshit. So, not looking forward to seeing Shane ever again, if that's the case. I will say I agree with MTV's decision to not air this. It kind of reminds me of when Snooki got punched in the face by a stranger at the bar in Jersey Shore, and they like showed everything leading up to it and everything after, and then like blacked out the screen when it happened. Like, I really wouldn't want to see this in any sort of way. So while I think how they presented it was sort of wrong to like insinuate that it was like because of Simone's like kind of weird request to help her with a hygiene issue. And I say that because LaToya said it, not because I think like heads are hygiene, but anyway, I thought that was like a weird analogy.
Heads are hygiene.
Second contender for the hashtag. But I don't know. I think they sort of played Simone out here by making it seem like it was that started it.
Yeah, because it seems so petty. It seems so petty. That's why I was like, in my notes, I was like, how did a conversation about greasing your hair become this? And Shane's the one who gets sent home. Take Simone with you, bro. And then like, exactly. I don't know. Okay, this was another note that I wrote down. That do you think that they might be invited back as rivals?
Do I think that they could be invited back as rivals? Should we? Sorry, say that again.
Do you think that Shane and Simone, after this went down, might be invited back as rivals?
No.
Like as a pair? No. I don't know. That was where my head went. I was like, maybe they both aren't great competitors, but they both are crazy. So it
what a
would
disaster
be an interesting,
that would be.
Yeah, okay. I said either amazing or miserable, and I guess we're going miserable.
I can't even react to that. I'm just like, wait, say that three times slow.
Well, it's interesting, too, this whole situation, because I remember when you were talking about last episode, Brian was saying how MTV is so progressive in the way that they they present Ammo, and they had Rachel and Anissa as exes on that one season, as like to have a lesbian couple, and they're always like kind of ahead of the ball. But then they still are churning out this shit with like the way that Corey is acting about women. So there's one step forward, but how many steps backwards at the same time? You know, you can be as only as progressive as your least progressive show or least progressive moment. And so I do want to give them props for at least seeming to add some diversity in casting and diversity in like experiences that they bring onto the show. But at the same time, like, this is what so many seasons of this show and so many seasons of their other shows involve these like hateful acts against women and super violent like testosterone fests. And I mean, I still watch, so I'm part of the problem, but it is interesting when you want to give credit to the network, but at the same time, kind of zoom out and realize, I don't know, is the credit really worth giving?
Well, so the thing with that is like MTV doesn't create these people. And I think it is like sort of an accurate portrayal, unfortunately, of the diversity of perspectives in America. And there are people that react the way Shane reacts and react towards women the way Corey and Tony act. And, you know, like it goes back to like the Miz and Coral talking about race, and like there are people, you know, who have issues with people like Ammo or Pedro or whatever. And like throughout the entire history of MTV. Like, they're not just showing people with progressive attitudes towards things, but they're also showing people who still hold on to hate. And in a way, I hope, and I think MTV's desired result through this is to inspire change. Like when they had Jenna on Ammo season, who was a complete racist, and
you know,
she didn't really seem to learn from the situation, but the hope is that people themselves learn and the audience learn. So I'm not upset that they have these people on, as long as it gets treated in the right way. And I think for the most part, I hesitate to say this, I'm trying to think back, but like for the most part, you know, they send Mike home with complete remorse and tears and everything when he says the N-word on The Real World. And, you know, they send Shane home. I'm still trying to decide if this was handled completely correct, or if they should have, without showing it, been more clear about what really happened. Have anyone against Simone in this case, but
yeah, it's a shitty situation. I hope that the rest of the season, you know, can bounce back and shake this off as best they can. Conveniently for the rest of the house, they don't even know that this is happening, you know, so there's out of sight, out of mind. And Darrell, who I can only imagine is going to be the person who gets sent back into the house from Redemption, is going to probably very diplomatically explain it, because he is he's like the fourth party in the situation. Closing the book on Redemption House insanity, what do you anticipate for the rest of the season? Like who are you really rooting for to win? Who are you hoping gets sent home? Who do you want to hook up? Like a brief synopsis as we wrap things up.
Wow. What am I hoping to see?
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting rid of getting the Tony and Camilla situation over with, because I'm kind of dreading that, honestly, as things progress. I'm looking for a little bit more sort of lighthearted energy. Things like, I don't know, I just feel like Tori comes to mind when I think about that. Like, she just like really exemplifies like what I want the future of the challenge to be. Like looking for love, looking for a win, being able to back it up. What else? Really looking forward to next week, seeing how elimination is going to unfold. I think that is like a critical piece, absolutely critical piece that we're missing. Anything
agreed
from you on your end?
I'm interested to see. I mean, it looks like we've got some more shit going down with Anissa, Camilla, and Jordan. I gotta know what that's about. I'm really interested to see what some of these rookies do, whether Ammo lives up to their word and actually pulls some stuff out. It would be dope to see Ammo, you know, like beat a vet in an elimination. I'd love to see some of these rookies, yes, step up to the plate in the best way, because I'm tired of the same old, and at the same time, I want to see the old school people like Veronica and Derek K show what they've got. I have really high hopes for this season. I'm so excited to keep watching and listening to your podcast and wear a challenge jersey with Brian's name on it.
Going out as strongly as you started, Johnny, it's been great having you on the show. Love your analysis, your questions, your answers. This was so much fun to talk to you and catch up about the show. People don't know is that it's 1:30 in the morning my time, so I do unfortunately have to wrap up, or I could do this really with you forever, and hope to have you back on again soon. In the meantime, you can subscribe to hear all of mine and Brian's shows with all of our magical guests that come on from time to time at robhasawebsite.com/challenge iTunes. You can follow me at Lash Tweets, and they can follow you
at JohnnyLangan_ on Instagram or JLangs22 on Twitter. And definitely don't come to either of our accounts if you're looking for great commentary on race relations. So
we're doing the best with a tough situation. I think you brought a lot of important information to the show.
Yo, our hearts are in the right place. And thank you so much for having me. I, again, could talk to you for hours.
Come back anytime. And I will borrow from Brian. Until next week, Have a good one.